Hello, this is Date Night In, the podcast where we give suggestions for movies that are available via streaming for those nights when you just don't want to go out or no one wants to make a decision about what to watch. If you've got little ones running around, we also discuss timestamps for keeping your finger on that pause button in case they decide to make a guest appearance and see what everybody else is watching.
And we also have a cocktail suggestion that you can pair your movie watching activity with. Just so you know, we are not mixologists, so they might not be exactly the most sophisticated drinks or to your liking, but that's your fault if you make it and you think you won't like it. So we're just here to suggest things.
Okay? Yeah. And there is absolutely no judgment if you decide to make it just for yourself. If this is something that you just want to find a movie to hang out by yourself, you know,
you can date yourself. It's all about self-love.
Exactly. This is a judgment-free podcast.
Yeah.
My name's David. I am a horror writer. I've also taught university classes on film studies, screenwriting. I've written some terrible horror movies that you've probably never seen, and also some comic books that hopefully you've had a chance to read.
My name is Jessica. I've never done a podcast. We're married, so I'm his wife. But I kind of give more just that, like, what are we feeling about this movie type of attitude and my general wittiness.
Yeah. We wanted to create this podcast. We were thinking about people like us who are trying to find something to watch on streaming. Let's have some fun with it. You will notice that we're not going to do any Lord of the Rings movies on here or anything that's super long, because if you're anything like us, you've got a pretty busy schedule and you're trying to find manageable films that are, you know, around the 2 hour mark that you can watch.
Just something you guys, you know, you and your significant other or friends, like, you can watch together and have discussions about, and just, you know, something that's time sensitive, really, because we all have a lot going on in our lives. And I think we originally started the idea for this podcast several years ago when our kids were real little and we couldn't get out all the time. You know, babysitters are expensive. Unless they're your mom, she's free. So,
thanks, you know, mom.
Yeah. So we kind of had to find ways to, you know, connect still while also not spending any money or really being out too late and, you know, being able to be home with our kids. So, and yeah. We both work. So, you know, sometimes we were on a weird schedule where we had to wake up early. So,
yeah. That always adds always a factor as well.
Yep. So.
So for this episode, we were in the mood for a thriller because it's October. It's time for scary movies. This is like, you know, fall sets the tone for pumpkins, leaves. It gets darker out earlier, even here in Arizona, where it's still 100 degrees during the day, but at night it's plummeting to the low 70s, which for those of us in the desert is chilly weather, and we're finally starting to fantasize about getting those jackets out of storage and, you know, the possibility that we'll have to start bundling up at some point.
Yeah, in like mid-January, we'll start bundling up or putting on two layers of clothes instead of just a shorts and a t-shirt.
With it being spooky season, we definitely wanted to watch a horror movie. And what better horror movie to watch than the new Hellraiser, which is available via Hulu. You have no doubt seen advertisements for it somewhere. This is, of course, the new installment of the franchise that
it's
begins.
It's almost like an updated sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The original came out in 86. 87, thank you. 1987, directed by Clive Barker, based on his short novel, The Hellbound Heart. And it is, of course, a classic. Even if you don't like horror movies, you've never seen Hellraiser, you could probably pick out Pinhead from a lineup and, you know, you're familiar with who he is, if not what he does.
Pins all over his
head. He's got pins on his head. I mean, so ironically,
descriptive.
He is never referred to as Pinhead in the films. That was actually a nickname that came up on set because of that, because he's got pins in his head, right? But even in this new one, the new actress who takes over the role of Pinhead, you know, quite the shakeup of having a female take over the role, even though it's a genderless demon from another dimension, so it really shouldn't matter if it's male or female. But she does not just come out and do a Doug Bradley impersonation. Doug Bradley was the actor who played the original Pinhead. She made this her own. Like, she was her own.
She was really great.
Pinhead. But even in the credits, she's credited as lead Cenobite. And, you know, once again, in canon, never referred to as Pinhead. But we are going to continue to say Pinhead because that's what everybody knows them as.
Yeah. And you know what I thought was actually a really cute idea? Because I had never seen the original, probably because I was really, I mean, I was only four when it came out and then just never really got into horror. Until, I mean, to be honest, I'm really still not into horror.
Hurts to hear it.
Only because you watch it and I get into it. But it is not something like I typically would pick for myself, I don't think. But I like it when we watch it together. But I was thinking a good activity for couples is you could either read the short story beforehand and then discuss it while you're watching the film, or watch the original, which is what we did, because I had never seen it. I wanted to do like a comparison. So I watched it. I was really shocked at how well this held up. I was kind of expecting like those pixelated special effects like they have and it, from back in the 80s, and it was not that at all. I was really impressed with how the story flowed. It was really interesting. It didn't really, there was nothing really to date it except for the fact that they have landlines in their home.
Like, oh, and the daughter.
Yeah, I mean, her hair for sure is a little iffy. But yeah, I mean, it was really good. And so I thought that would be fun. You know, you could either both watch it together, or read the book together, and then discuss it.
Yeah, do a double feature. It's on Amazon Prime. So once again, fitting in with the whole concept of this podcast, which is, you know, what movies are available via
the streaming
services. And we paired this with a smoked old fashioned that we dubbed the Hellraiser drink. And we did that because why?
Because I did a very quick search for Hellraiser cocktail online. And Google failed me and returned a Hellraiser shot, which I'm not going to truly judge it until maybe we should try it. But and first of all, we don't have any of these ingredients. It sounds disgusting. It sounds super sweet. It was part Sambuca, part Midori melon, and part strawberry liqueur, which I've never had even strawberry liqueur. But my pre-diabetes, almost 40-year-old self, like, gagged at the thought of trying to drink this. So
that sounds like something the Cenobites would force on you upon being summoned.
Drowning me in a sea of Midori
melon. We have a shot that will tear your liver apart.
It'll make my hemoglobin A1C go sky high. Which it's already not great. So, we both like old fashions. I think that's your favorite drink for sure.
Yes.
I do enjoy an old fashioned. It's a real heavy, like it's real heavy in the, you know, liquor department. If you're not somebody who enjoys like either a neat drink or, you know, a straight up drink, it might not be your flavor, but I think it's always something that it's a classic drink that you should try it at least once. So we made ours with Four Roses bourbon, which is amazing. It's so good. And it was a pretty typical old-fashioned recipe. Just Google old-fashioned. And with sugar, Angostura bitters, a little bit of water. And then we finished ours off actually with a smoke.
The smoke was an anniversary gift. Thank you, Jessica. She got me for our anniversary a smoking kit, which features a butane torch that's like shaped like a gun, so it feels really cool to fire it off, as well as a collection of little wood chips. And you basically set the wood chips over in a metal cage over your cocktail, burn them with a butane torch, cover it with a wooden
little wooden lid. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you hold it over your drink for about a minute. When you remove it, you will taste the smoke. It doesn't overpower the drink at all, but it is a really well accented flavor. And the looking at the smoke like billowing out and like
cool. Yeah. It just looked really neat.
Too. Hovering over your drink. It definitely gave you vibes of, you know, another dimension or hell or whatever it is. So it paired really well thematically with the new Hellraiser, and it tasted quite good to drink while we were watching
it. Yeah, it didn't actually knock me on my ass because old fashions are strong, And I thought it was really good. And usually, like I said, I'm kind of sensitive to sugary stuff, but or I say I am, and then I'll go eat a cinnamon roll. But in drinks, it really hits me. But I really liked this recipe that we had. So
yeah. So basically, the new Hellraiser is not a remake of the original Hellraiser. It is not the same story. The original followed a deviant named Frank who found the
lament. Can I read my 5-sentence synopsis? Because I was actually impressed with myself that I...
Okay, everybody's got to hear this.
This is the old synopsis of the old Hellraiser, and I wrote it in 5 sentences. So, the 5-sentence synopsis is that a guy named Frank opens a box in his childhood basement in an attempt to experience otherworldly pleasures. He gets pulled into another dimension where he is then reanimated after his brother Larry gets cut and spills his blood on the same floor where he opened this box. Larry's wife Julia had an affair with Frank a long time ago and helps Frank murder guys so that he can become fully formed. In a total act of grodiness, Frank tries to get with his niece after she comes to the house to see her dad, but she gets away with the box that Frank had pulled Frank into another dimension. Creepy dudes come out of the box and try to take the niece back to the scary place with them until she convinces them that her uncle escaped and basically narcs on him so she can get away.
That's a really good synopsis.
Yeah.
I like the way that you put it, that he tries to get with his niece, which he does.
That's gross. It is, like, yeah. Even for, you know, like, I mean, I guess if you're a deviant or, you know, you're kind of into some weird stuff, that may not be as weird. And he was a skeleton not like an hour ago, so I think something's going on.
Well, not an hour in movie time, but I think it took place over the course of a few weeks. But yeah, no, still, well, yeah, still she had creepy
to get all those guys back to the place. And, but yeah, the new one is, like you said, it's more of like a new installment of the franchise.
It
doesn't follow those characters at all.
No, but it still utilizes the same concepts of someone who has experienced all the pleasures that Earth, that, you know, this world or this life can offer, and they're seeking something more, and so they find the lament configuration, not realizing that it's, you know, there's a huge price to pay for these sights that the Cenobites have to show you. And it's very updated. It feels very relevant without being... Sometimes when they try to make things modern or more timely, they are going to do it in a way where in a few years, you know, that's all that you can think of is that time that it was built. This doesn't do that. It is relevant to modern things, which we'll discuss a little bit.
Yeah, cell phones. They don't show, like, Windows 10 or anything, but...
No, but, you know, I mean, it's...
Cars.
Fairly obvious references to people like Jeffrey Epstein, you know, the modern opioid epidemic and things like that, to where historically you'll be able to look back and say, yes, that's what they were communicating or that's what they were influenced by, but it's not going to be like you see it and you're like, oh, yeah, that's 2022.
I think you're going to be able to put it into the context of the time that it was made, but those themes are, they're never going to disappear. Like, there's always going to be rich, weird men and women out there who just want and want and want and are always seeking, you know, whatever they can't have. And then there's always going to be, you know, people suffering from, I mean, addiction crisis is never going to go away. There's always going to be some new drug or some new high or whatever. So it's just, it's going to continue to be a pretty relevant conversation, I think.
Absolutely. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's definitely something to talk about if you're with a date and be like, so have you had any addictions in the past?
So, no, yay or nay.
Tell me about your 12-step program and to find out if, you know, the sexual predilections of the person you might want to see. So
speaking of,
if they're like, oh, this looks amazing, you're probably like, I'm going to go.
Absolutely. But that's that ties into exactly what this the movie starts off pretty quickly throwing you into this world. It's all about a character named Riley who is a recovering addict. Maybe not.
We have to say that there's spoilers.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, so. Huge spoiler alert. We are going to talk about things that happen in the movie. Not specifics, but you know, there might be more information than you usually like. I actually like spoilers.
Yeah, see, Jessica enjoys, she'll sometimes, if she knows we're going to watch a movie, she'll just go read the Wikipedia entry.
It makes it more enjoyable for me. I know there's other people out there like me. We're not all weirdos. We like spoilers. It's more enjoyable. I read an article about it.
I am the opposite. As soon as I know that I want to see something, I'll try not to watch trailers. I'll try to, you know, mute the words on Twitter. I'll do all that stuff to make sure that I don't get spoiled. So
it doesn't stress you out, though.
No.
It's a thrill. I want to know what's going to happen.
No, and this movie, I'm really glad I didn't get spoiled because I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's, you know, it's faithful to the source material while updating it with its own vision and flavor, and all the Cenobites were amazing. They were worthy additions to the Order of the Gash, not, you know, just repeats.
Is that what they're
called?
The Order of the Gash?
If you read this, if you read the short story or the novella that it's based on, they tell you that that's what they're part of. So anyway, nerd alert. The movie, it's really cool because if you love the Hellraiser, I don't even want to say the franchise because, God, they made some terrible movies. I love the first four. I will admit that part three and part four are definitely they start to go downhill. But part four was audacious. It just didn't pull it off. And there's a lot of reasons for that with studio interference and money and whatever. But we're not here to talk about those. We're here to talk about the new ones. But if you were a fan of those, you'll start seeing from the first scene, you'll see that the filmmakers loved those, or at least are familiar with them as well, because there are things in this, you know, this huge house of horrors that are allusions to the lament configuration and to all these things that come and go throughout the series. And, you know, right away you just know, like, oh, these guys know what they're doing. It's awesome.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about the movie?
Yeah. So it's about a character named Riley, who is a recovering drug addict, who has a boyfriend named Trevor. And this guy Trevor runs art transportation or trafficking. You never really know because he seems like kind of a shady character. But he basically says he knows where some rich people have abandoned a crate, and there's got to be something inside worth stealing. So he tells Riley, if you come with me, I will cut you in and we can, you know, on whatever is inside. They go to open it, and lo and behold, it is a safe containing the lament configuration.
Yeah, and that's how she gets pulled into this world.
Our Jeffrey Epstein character in the movie is named Voight. And so basically,
played by
Goran
Visnjic, I believe is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's his. Yeah. I'll have to look.
Jessica got very excited when
I was so excited about him because he was in ER a long time ago, and that's I don't know, my TV memory must only be from like the early 2000s, but he looks fantastic because I think when he was in ER, he was couldn't have been older than like 30. He was in his 30s, I want to say, but he looks really good.
Yeah. It was pretty funny too, because I was not familiar with him, so I was just like, oh, yeah. Okay. But so it opens up with a typical horror movie. You open up with your hook, and the hook here is quite literal because it is a, you know, annoyingly handsome dude with, like, you know, just looks like walked right out of an underwear ad, and is lured into a room by Isabella Rossellini, who basically says, you know, hey, this guy Voight would love to meet you. Go to this room. So he shows up in the room. There is the lament configuration, which he is tricked into manipulating. And once he does, it cuts him. His blood opens it, which is, you know, if you're a fan of the Hellraiser series, this is all following course. And then as soon as it cuts him, he realizes he's trapped in this room. He can't get out. The Cenobites show up off screen. We don't get to see them yet, but like I knew that we were in for a good time because the way that they show this dude getting ripped apart by, not even ripped apart, but like, you know, impaled with all these hooks and stretched and lifted.
Yeah.
It's done so well. And like the way that something that the filmmakers do throughout the movie is the world becomes like the lament configuration, where it's these moving puzzle
pieces.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Like
moving
in,
pieces.
In the, they show that in when he's in that room, the there's like a skylight and the pattern is changing, and they go more into it later. But I wanted to bring up, because we said when to put your finger on the pause button, and this is like a pausey.
Oh,
definitely,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
a pausey.
Make sure
movie.
Your kids are asleep.
You should watch it when they're asleep. If you're lucky enough and your children or whoever goes to bed early at like 7, you'll have no problem with this movie. But it is like, from right off the bat, there's a pretty obvious, like, kind of like an orgy happening. There's no nudity, but there's a lot of sex scenes going on within the first 10 minutes. And then at eight minutes is the first scene where he gets hooked. So just keep it close by and make sure there are batteries in your remote and everything. And
yeah, you might actually need to just turn the TV. Sometimes you pause it and it pauses on a
on
scene
the
that, you know, the kid, yeah, the kid
just
walks
like
to the,
dive,
oh my
in
God,
front of it, you know,
and just turn the TV off and then turn it back on.
Yeah. So it leads right in back. It actually starts with the orgy scene. It goes into the scene with the hooks and that guy. And then it goes right back into another sex scene. So it's like pretty typical horror movie, like, recipe.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that we need to discuss, because it's on Hulu, is that you get
freaking
sucked in.
Ad.
Yeah, yeah. You get into the scene and you're just like, oh, wow, this is like a crazy intense sequence. And then suddenly it kicks in.
Although what I thought was really funny is on our ad setup anyway, it's in the middle of this sex scene. And then an ad for Hims comes on for ED. So I thought it was almost a part of the movie for a second. And I can't honestly remember what subscription to Hulu we have. I know there's an ad-free version.
Yeah, we don't have the
available,
ad-free version.
But I also get really irritated about having to pay for Hulu and then also having to pay for another tier to
get
ad-free.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I feel like I'm not willing. But that was the only ad we saw.
Was just for Hims.
There wasn't, later on, there was another ad break, but the ad never played.
Mm-hmm.
It like skipped it or something. And no. So we only really got one pause for an ad, which I think it's kind of crappy that Hulu makes a movie and then doesn't offer it without commercials.
Yeah.
But
I mean, as a filmmaker, I'd be pretty pissed off if, you know, knowing that, you know, something because you put so much time into these scenes and, like, you know, you're trying to manipulate the audiences. Emotions, and then knowing that, you know, that's going to be completely thwarted by a capitalist need for advertising. It's like, come on. But
So they break into the safe. They get the lament configuration. At 33 minutes and 48 seconds, there's a nude guy in a shower. Mm-hmm. You don't really see anything, but
see some man butt, but that's about it.
Yeah, and then we see we never see Riley brush her teeth, which really grosses me out because she's been up for like 24 hours at this point.
And she's on drugs and
yeah,
do all
she
stuff,
like
so, yeah.
Has been sleeping in a playground and whatever. And so we never see her. She shows up as he's in the shower, gross, and then they jump right into a sex scene at 33:48. So it's kind of like, okay, start pausing there.
Yeah. But basically, so once Riley gets involved with, you know, so after, you know, aggressively handsome dude gets pulled apart and we are introduced to Voight, something that if you're a fan of the Hellraiser series, I got a giggle out of, you know, it's immediately this guy Voight reveals himself and shows that he is trying to, you know, murder these guys or these people so that he can communicate with Leviathan. Leviathan doesn't come into play until Hellraiser Part 2, but the fact that they're already referencing it here in this, the new one, I thought, you know, once again, it just shows that they were fans of the material. They knew what they were doing. And
yeah.
It just
well,
like,
Clive Barker was a producer
yep.
on it. So, you know,
no.
It was going to be a...
So Clive Barker was a producer, but this was written by some guys that have done some really cool independent horror movies before, including one called The Night House, which just came out recently. It's available on HBO Max, but they're a team that work with David Bruckner, the director. So it's Ben Collins and Luke Petrowski, which I hope I'm pronouncing that right because I'm big fans of their work. But anyway, they wrote this. They've also written some other really cool movies. They've got one called Super Dark Times. It's on Netflix. It's really good as well. Anyway, but, you know, they are taking Clive Barker's work. He's producer, so he's making sure that You know, hopefully they're faithful to his vision and collecting that paycheck as well.
Well, so around 44 minutes, there's another kind of pausey part where there's a scary sequence with the Cenobites. Like you said earlier, in this movie, in the world, when the Cenobites show up, the like hallucinations of the person, the world starts to shift, and it becomes kind of reminds me of The Cube. That really old movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where the room starts to shift in kind of like as the box is moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the Cenobites show up. I love the name Cenobite. It sounds like something.
Well, no, because you think it sounds like a dessert. Yeah.
Anyway, so, during my Google, when I was trying to find that Hellraiser shot,
mm-hmm.
Cenobites came up. Like people making recipes called Cenobites.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Like C E.
Cinnamon.
Cenobites, yeah. So I was like, oh, you guys are very creative out there. A lot of weird and messed up dessert makers. You know. But anyway, so 44 minutes after the new dude in the shower, within the next 10 minutes there's another kind of scary sequence.
Yeah. And at that, I mean, basically, if your kids come in the room when the Cenobites are on screen, they will be scarred for life. Because these Cenobites look amazing.
They
the makeup
really
design
do.
Is top notch. Like, Clive Barker's original one, at one point the studio was like, hey, we don't want to call it the Hellbound Heart. So what would you recommend we call it? And Clive Barker said, how about we call it Sadomasochist from Beyond the Grave? And they were like, no, how about we call it Hellraiser? So the Cenobites are, you know, granted it was made in the 80s, but they're all black leather and bodily disfigurement.
Yeah.
And it works because it worked for that movie very well. And it holds up, you know, even today they're classic designs. But these new designs are like H.R. Geiger-esque. Oh, man, it's hard to describe.
That's the point, is they're otherworldly, but in a very, like, designy way. Like, very cool. They have a lot of, like, pearly-looking pins.
Like, you ever see those anatomical sculptures in med schools and stuff? Where there are these pins with the large balls at the top of them so that you could, you know, you could see the needle.
Almost like a sewing needle kind of... it's a notion, like a notion pin. It's just, it's very cool. Like the ones with the glass beads on the top. but they're very beautiful. Like they're beautiful in a real messed up way. Yeah, the Cenobites are. All of them are. And there's Pinhead. There's one. The Chatterer is there.
Yep, Chatterer is the only other one that came back.
Silent Hill, kind of.
Yep.
With the nurses, almost.
Very much.
The Weeper. And what was the name of the other one?
Pinhead, the Chatterer,
Pinhead,
the Weeper.
Chatterer.
The Gasp.
Oh, that one was good. Because Isabella Rossellini in the movie has like lung cancer or something. And she's... So I felt it was like poetry that they had that one there.
And then the Asphyx. The asphyxiated.
They were gorgeous.
Yep. Like just creepy, but like so well designed.
What is that sex thing that... Where people like get strung up with scarves. Shibari. Yes.
Don't ask me why I know that. But
it kind of reminded me of, well, I know it too, obviously, because I just asked about it. I just forgot the name. But it kind of reminds me of seeing like pictures of that because
the way that they're contorted
always
and
artful.
Like,
yeah, it's like weirdly artful. Yeah, that's kind of what they reminded me of.
Yep. Not to get too off topic, but like basically the later Hellraiser movies sucked so bad because they were just like shoehorning the Cenobites into these crappy scripts that they already had available. And the Cenobites became like morality police. Like, you know, oh, if you were too much of a deviant, we're here to judge you. Mm-hmm. When in Clive Barker's original vision, they were here to reward you, or they were here to, you know, if you wanted excess, if you wanted all these like deviant things, they came to show you things that were even further than that. And so I felt like this movie really got back to that, got back into their vices or their passions became them and like, you know, more like mutilated their bodies to reflect that and stuff. And it was just
really, really good. Cool. So there is something else I want to bring up, but in the movie, they show the house that Voight lived in, that you kind of start out in the very beginning. It has this like awesome cage around it, and it kind of is the shapes of the lament configuration, and it was so cool looking and just like such a super awesome concept of how it played into the ending on how it was kind of like built to be a little prison. Voight is disfigured. Like he, when he gets the, like whatever, gets the lament configuration completed in the movie, he asks for sensation, like to reach the edge of sensation. They kind of grant you a gift when you reach the end of this configuration. He picks sensation. So they give him this like insane contraption that puts him in intense pain. But somehow he manages to get a freaking cage built around his house. I don't know it. Like if that's just okay money, like you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But how did he accomplish this?
Well, he still has...
to look it up on like TaskRabbit or something. No, like
he still has Serena. Serena is she still around. So I would assume, that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He's probably, you know, hey, I've got this thing tearing my nerves or twisting my nerves every few minutes. Do you mind doing this for me?
Well, yeah.
It's...
I cannot go to the bathroom, but I would love this huge cage built around my house, please. Please don't ask questions.
There's a couple of things in the movie because I think you could tell from listening to us speak about it that we both did enjoy the movie. We both really liked it.
The way it started out, though, I hated it. I did not like the first like 30 minutes.
Well, because it's like the aggressively handsome guy Joey. When he gets killed, you're just like, oh, okay, this guy. Even though it's a really cool sequence,
not likable either in the beginning.
Riley's actually super unlikable along with Trevor, her boyfriend. Neither of them, and so the fact that you know right away that these are your two main characters, and like within a few scenes of them hanging out together, you're just like, oh man, I don't like either of you.
Any movie where you have people who are very selfish, like they don't have any redeeming qualities, it's very difficult. But I think too, this movie is about. It's about how do you redeem yourself or like what do you feel in this world and and you know taking you through that journey. And so I ended up really liking it, but
yeah,
it's hard when you start out with characters where you're like, oh, I don't want you to succeed in any way possible,
you know. And I do want to credit the actress Odessa Xeon. I hope I'm pronouncing her last name right, but she kills it as Riley, because by the end of it, her reaction and when she makes the final decision that, you know, the Cenobites, of course, are going to offer her something, and she makes her decision.
Don't give like, that away.
I thought she nailed it. Her expression, at that point, I was loving her, which, you know, once again, credit to the writers. That's a character arc. You start off not liking this character. You end up really liking them. And I was thinking about it after the movie, and actually Jessica brought this up when we were discussing it too, but they portrayed an addict's journey so well that like she's willing to destroy all of her friendships, relationships, and everything for this high, for this substance that she's been chasing. And then the Cenobites and their, you know, the pleasures that they can give and the pain that they can inflict are very much a representation of her journey as an addict. And by the end of it, the decision that she has to make is super reflective of an addict who has that sort of...
harmed the people. Like everyone's just kind of collateral damage in your life. And people who love you and care about you, you end up hurting them the most just by feeding your addiction. And that's truly, you know, one of the really sad parts about it is you kind of alienate people and hurt them to the point where you don't know if they're going to come back to you. So,
Yeah. And so in this movie, it's Riley has a brother named Matt, who's got a boyfriend named Colin. And then they have a roommate named Nora.
They're all pretty upstanding citizens with their lives together, and they end up
Riley and Trevor being the exceptions. It's once again, it's good characterization. Every character is pretty distinct. Most of them meet a pretty awful fate at the hands of the Cenobites, and you get kind of like, I know Jessica got pretty mad at the thought that some of these characters were like doomed to.
That really resonates with me is like when people who have done nothing wrong, they get the worst end. But that's a part of this kind of addiction story is, you know, these people have done nothing. They've done nothing but love this person and be near them. And they're the ones that kind of get hurt the most. without giving, I guess, too much away, even though we said spoilers, but.
Yeah, but there are also, I mean, you know, I would really like you to watch this movie and decide that for yourself. And there's one character's death in particular that really didn't feel like they deserved it. And yet it's so brutal and so beautifully done, like beautifully shot. It's creepy. It's scary. It's heartbreaking because you kind of like this character. And then when it happens, they do such a good job with it.
I mean, I don't know, going back to the whole date thing, is if you're on a first date, like, this hits some really heavy topics. Like, I don't know if it's something I would necessarily be like, hey, come over and let's watch this super lighthearted, funny movie, like horror movie.
Well, that's why this podcast is called Date Night In and not Netflix and Chill.
Yeah, and hookup town. Hellraiser hookup town.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you bring somebody over and this puts them in the mood, then good, you know.
I'd be like, okay, time to go.
Yeah. It's a heavy movie, for sure.
It is. It's very emotional. It's actually more emotional than I would have. You know, I was just thinking about this, how horror movies have really taken a turn in, like, the last 10 years, I would say, where they're really finding new ways to incorporate real human emotion and not just, like, gore and, you know, torture porn. Like, I'm hoping that we're out of this kind of Saw era and Hostel era of just seeing, like, people die and having there be, like, an emotional or, like, some kind of stake in what is actually happening to people, because these, like, at the end of the day, like, these are human beings. I mean, we're watching human beings on screen, and I think maybe that's why I never got into horror like that much, because it's hard to comprehend, like, somebody dying, especially in, like, a really brutal way, without there being some kind of, like, emotional stake in it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think, you know, there are, I mean, these filmmakers like these and, the, you know, their past, the films that they've done together have been indications of, you know, that this is that shifting way of portraying.
Yeah, like, know, the tide kind of. And hopefully, maybe we'll see a horror movie at the win an Academy Award.
Silence of the Lambs was...
It's more like a psychological thriller, I would say. It's not horror. Like, Get Out.
One screenplay, right? But it picture.
I actually don't know. But yeah, I think it's like Best Picture or something that horror movies don't typically win. But yeah. I think I'll give a rundown of all the timestamps at the end, too. So, because at 1 hour, 7 minutes, and 40 seconds, there's another scary sequence with the Cenobites. And I think actually after an hour, it's pretty guaranteed that you're not going to be able to watch it. Like, you are going to have to be real cautious if you've got little ones making appearances, because it is kind of a, it's just like one sequence after another, after another.
Yeah, the whole third act in Voight's house.
Yeah, I wrote down 1 hour 30. Basically anything after 1 hour, just hover your finger over the pause button or switch screen or whatever, because it's all disturbing looking. And like you said, the Cenobites are really well done, but they are freaking scary looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lighting was really good in this as well.
Yeah. Yeah. The good use of shadows and darkness, and the way that the Cenobites are, especially Pinhead, is usually like kind of lingering at the edge of,
like, the colors, like the blue and the very like darkness. I will say, I don't think there was really any jump scares in this. I'm a jumpy person. I didn't think there were many
jump scares. No, I don't remember you jumping. So. Yeah,
I didn't think it was scary that way.
Just a lot of dread. Yeah. A lot of, you know, especially once somebody gets pinged with the lament configuration, you know it's coming. You know, real quick, I did want to talk about this because, so the lament configuration classically is just, it's a puzzle box, and once you open it, it opens the portal to another dimension where the Cenobites are now free to enter and take you with them. They made it so that the lament configuration now has like seven, I think it was seven, right? Seven.
Well, like shifts.
It shifts. And each phase is a new step, basically, that requires new sacrifice. I loved that concept because it stays true to the source material, what you love, but it adds a new layer to it that, you know, elevates the stakes for these characters, because now all of a sudden there's, you know, there's got to be more sacrifices at each turn. And I don't know, it really, like, you know, opened up the world of the Cenobites too, of like the original movie, that classic line, you know, the box, you opened it, we came. Now it's like, you know,
you gotta open, put some work into
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And not only that, but we're
it's
gonna
intentional.
Yeah, we're gonna continue to get worse as you progress. Yeah. You know, oh, it's
and then
so
at
cool.
the end you get to ask for that, you know, whatever gift mm-hmm. that you want. But don't trust a Cenobite because they mess you up.
Yes, yes. Which I really dug the ending.
You shouldn't ties, trust anything that comes from another dimension.
Especially with pins in its head.
Yeah.
I love, too, the ending I was telling Jessica about how it ties, you know, ties into the sequel, Hellraiser 2, Hellbound. This new one really does a good job of harking back to that. So, once again, if I feel like I've said it a few times, if you're a fan of the original series, you're going to love this one.
Yeah. And did you think it was a good date night movie?
I think it's a good date night movie for somebody like you and I, where, you know, we know
we can have discussions.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a little deeper, comfortable having deeper discussions about this.
Yep. I will say you need to have a strong stomach. It's very gory. There's a lot of violence, though, and
yeah,
there's a lot of
violence.
People being yanked apart and, you know, bent into uncomfortable positions and just like. The screaming too. I mean, they're being tortured. They're very
sad. Yeah. It is sad. Like, to me, it was very sad.
Yeah, there's a few. Once again, there are a few characters that you really don't want to see die, and they die horribly.
And they die in a way that you don't really know what happens to them.
Yeah.
Because they are in this other kind of interdimension. Like, are these innocent people who didn't ask to be there just tortured forever? Like, or. Is it, you know, I don't like that concept. Like, to me as a person, like, I don't like the idea of innocent people just.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a bummer.
There's something
for sure.
that they don't ask for.
Mm.
So.
I would say this is definitely a.
The drink helped, I guess.
Yeah.
It was like, I think I finished it halfway through or whatever.
I would absolutely recommend this as a thought-provoking and entertaining movie. Even not perfect, it has some things that, you know, we talked about. It's hard to get interested in Riley and Trevor at first. There are a couple of horror movie logic things that are going to happen along the way that you're just like, well, par for course as far as victims and people making dumb decisions. Serena's character has lung cancer that doesn't seem to inhibit her from like running full speed or anything. It's like, you know,
she's like good to go.
Yeah. Man. I mean, there are things that happen that prohibit this from being like a perfect movie. I really enjoyed it. And I would definitely recommend watching it with your significant other and be prepared to talk about what you thought about afterwards. And hopefully having a nice little cocktail in your stomach and ready to go to bed afterwards.
Yeah. The rundown for the timestamps of pausing moments is 8 minutes, 33 minutes and 48 seconds, 44 minutes, an hour and 7 minutes and 40 seconds, and an hour 30. Basically, I mean, this is something where I don't know if I'd watch this with younger.
Yeah,
there's like not long enough breaks between sequences to where I'd be really comfortable watching this with like
kids upstairs. Yeah. Like that could wander into the room anytime.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Put him to sleep. Watch him. It's only a 2-hour movie. So
yeah. You know. So it's good.
Yeah. Your kids go to, if your kids fall asleep by 10, you can watch it and be done by midnight.
So, which is what we did actually.
Yep.
So Hulu, please stop inserting
ads in the middle of a movie. Or give us all the ads up front. Like, give us, like, be like, hey, you're going to watch 4 ads, then you can watch your
movie. I like that option when people do that as well. And I know you can upgrade to the Hulu thing, but to mm-hmm. the ad-free. But, you know, don't add me because I just don't want to. We have, like, 5 streaming services. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah. So this is definitely, I'm hoping that, you know, this filmmaking team comes back. That they give us more entries into the Hellraiser universe. I would love to see what happens with. I don't want to spoil too much, but like, you know, where the story is going to go, because
it obviously leaves it off for the, you know, possibility of a quadruple movie or what. I don't even know what you call something that's like 25 installments in
a big money making franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, Jessica, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No.
I mean, definitely, you know, once again, this is a franchise long thought dead. The last entry came many years ago, and with the titular character no longer being portrayed by the same actor, this breathes some fresh air into the franchise and showed that you can progress the character with a new act, in this case an actress instead of the actor, can make it their own. And
I wanted to say too, I think the lead Cenobite, her name is
Jamie Clayton.
Okay, I believe she is trans as well, so that was a really cool find because it kind of, it supports that gender fluidity.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that these are, gender should be irrelevant when it comes to the Cenobites. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just as somebody who does love horror movies, this made me excited for what more could be in store. And I will say this, for, I know that we've, you know, taken some shots at Hulu and the fact with their practices of ads and stuff like that. This is the second feature that I've watched on Hulu in the last few months. The other one being Prey, which is the new Predator movie, which I also really loved. So we'll definitely be grateful that they're an avenue for releasing some of this very cool content that we can watch on our couches with a cocktail while having a date night in.
Boom, boom, boom.
All right, everybody. Well, once again, I'm David.
This is Jessica.
This was Date Night In. Thank you very much for listening.
Da-da-da-da-da.